Welcome to the Should Have Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Coming up on the show, Brad Thomas, CBS Sports, will join us. We'll go over week zero, look ahead to week one, get his thoughts on NFL as it was good to have it back on Saturday. Games that count. The first game was good to TCU-UNC. You got an upset. You got a close game. And the last game was good. Memphis-UNLV. Memphis pulling off the upset 27-21. UNLV had a terrible sequence right before the half, up 14-7. First and goal at the four, and they came away with no points. They went backwards. They missed a 32-yard field goal, and Memphis pretty much dominated the second half and won the game 27-21. But I'll start here with Belichick, and the games in between were a waste of time. And a lot of the games, USC won as a big favorite, didn't cover. Didn't go over the team total either. And NC State was one a lot of people liked, including me. That was not a competitive game. They were never in it. And, New Mexico, Florida State, the Jacksonville State, North Dakota. I mean, there was a lull, I would say, middle of the day up until the early evening, where a lot of it is like, all right, especially if you're losing bets, the charm of it. I say this a lot about the NCAA tournament. It's great. You're excited for it. When you're betting on these teams you're not that familiar with and you start losing, the charm wears off very quickly. And that was a kind of a feeling, I had watching some of those games yesterday. But I was happy for Belichick. I know nobody likes him. People think he's a cheater. He's a jerk. He's rude to the media. If you're not a Patriot fan, he probably beat your team and was winning Super Bowls. You wanted your team to win. And there's reasons for people not to like him. I get that. But first of all, I never want to see any legend, whether it's a player or a coach, just go down and ruin their legacy. And, a boxer taking one or two too many fights, and just being walked. Willie Mays falling down the outfield for the Mets. I don't want to see Belichick go 3-9, get fired, and just that's how we remember him. So not that this team or run is going to end with, a national championship or even a trip to the playoffs, because they got a tough schedule and they look pretty limited on offense. But seeing Belichick at his age, he's about mid-70s, all the money he's made, he doesn't need the money. I know he's not doing the job for free. Everything he's accomplished, all the Super Bowls he's won as a coordinator, as a coach, six as a coach, two as a coordinator. I mean, he's got 8 rings. For him to be sitting there coaching a North Carolina game in Ireland against TCU with a team that has no chance of winning a championship, I mean, he's just doing it for the love of it. And you could say, all right, yeah, it is for the money and he's getting paid, but TCU jumps offside, Belichick to coach the game, and TCU was terrible in the game. Belichick signaling first down, he's pumping his fist. That was cool, and he did coach a good game defensively. That was a weird flow of that game where it's 10-10 first quarter, and you're thinking, man, all these people on the under like me, wrong side, just going to be up and down, back and forth. And then there were 5 points scored the rest of the game, really just a bizarre kind of trajectory to how that one played out. And they made good adjustments. They adjusted to the run game. They looked fast on defense. They looked athletic. And Belichick and North Carolina go to 1-0. They play East Tennessee State coming up. But it gets hard. They play all the good teams in the ACC. They play Miami and Louisville. They play Notre Dame. It is not a favorable schedule for North Carolina, even though they look like they can at least be competitive defensively. I guess the goal would be, you get to 6 wins and get a bowl, something like that. So, again, you got to keep the expectations in check, but it was nice to see Belichick have a moment and remind everyone, yeah, he's still a good coach, this idea. And it's part of the other reason it's not part of why people don't like him, but post-Brady, it hasn't gone well. Brady won elsewhere. Belichick didn't win. People say, he's overrated. He only had Brady. It was a good reminder, even for a day, for a moment, to remind everyone that Belichick, there's a reason he was a good coach. All these years, a great coach all of these years. So North Carolina pulls the upset. The TCU quarterback, oh my goodness. I forget the announcer was saying it, that he went from Harvard to TCU to boost his draft stock. That kid is not draft stock. That kid's not playing in the NFL. I mean, he's got no shot. No shot. And reminds me of the line from The Sopranos where They're discussing and deciding what to do with Vito. And one of the guys goes, well, he can't come to the social club anymore. That much we know. And then I think it's Carlos says, social club? He's got to go. That's what I thought with draft stock. No draft stock. He's not, that kid is not an NFL player. He was bad. He was inaccurate. He lost track of what down it was. TCU just made mistake after mistake. And it's incredible what a fall from 4 years ago when they were playing for a national title game. And they absolutely blasted by Georgia, and since then it has gone downhill to say the least. The other big takeaway before we get to Brad, USC, a lot of people think they're gonna be better. Finally, this is the year Lincoln Riley, who makes a lot of money and he can coach offense. He gets Heisman Trophy winners, he coaches quarterbacks, he can coach offense. his defenses always stink, and they gave up 26 points to San Jose State. The building, by the way, was basically half empty and more than half empty. I get it was hot, it was humid, and you're playing San Jose State, but that was that was not a good scene for USC. And the idea that they're going to show improvement defensively, and some of it was backup, some of it was late, but not an inspiring performance from USC here to start the season. And just some of the screenshots, it's hard to believe that building is a USC game. It looks like a spring practice. I mean, there's empty seats all over the place. The one angle from a betting standpoint, USC won the toss and they took the ball first. Remember, that's a team, not most teams defer. USC is usually going to start with the ball in their games. It's hard to exploit that when the spread is 40. I guess you play first quarter. And if you did play first quarter minus 10, you had a tough one because they're up 7-0 and they got stopped at the one. And then the first quarter ended when USC had the ball again and they had it in the red zone. But you know, games that USC is an underdog or the line is low, USC is usually going to start with the ball because they usually elect to take the ball when they win the toss. But as far as being improved defensively, maybe we'll see it, but we didn't really see it in that opener against San Jose State. So the other games, again, not much to talk about. Memphis with a nice win, tough for UNLV right off the bat because, you know, group of six, you're only probably going to get that one team, and Memphis has a big leg up on you now, and you know, you can only afford so many losses, and that was one where just couldn't score. UNLV couldn't do much offensively. And we'll get to Brad's thoughts on all the games and everything that happened yesterday. The one, it's not a great week one slate, and we'll spend more time on it as we get closer. There's not a lot of, like, you know, one that's going to be interesting, and there's a lot of big spreads. There always are in week one, but usually get the four or five games with some juice, some interest. You know, the battle of top 10 teams, the Miami Notre Dame last year, LSU Clemson last year, which they play again this year, even though Clemson's not on that level. You get the Texas Ohio State week one. You don't get that this year. Georgia is laying 48. People are going to look at against Tennessee State. Kirby Smart never covers these big numbers. You're going to get a lot of people probably making the case for the underdog. And the big underdogs did well yesterday. New Mexico State, the USC game, San Jose State covered as a big dog. And by the way, the unders go 6-2, which makes sense. Lack of continuity on offense. Some of these buildings not exactly filled with it being so early and the kids not back on campus. All the new pieces, a lot of things make sense here and probably should have been more onto that. But the unders did go 6-2 on Saturday. Georgia, though, covering a big number, it'll be contrarian. They might be able to just maul Tennessee State, where even if they're not trying to score, they score 56, 63 points. And you're going to see that a lot. All the stats, Kirby Smart, when he's a 35-plus, 38-plus point favorite, how he never covers. Maybe this is the week when we cover when he covers. But you got Ole Miss and Louisville. That's a fun game. There's reason to like Louisville. Brohm is good as a coach. Now, you're missing the best number, and it's 6.5, and you're taking of the worst, not only of the number, but a key number here at 6.5, a very key number. And, you know, that's a tricky spot there. LSU Clemson, it's hard to lay points there. Clemson, you figure, is a dog. Sweeney, you'll get his team motivated, but LSU maybe just has the horses to run Clemson out of the building. So we'll do more on that with Brad. We'll do more of that throughout the week, but just good to have it back. Good to have it back. Unders did well. Underdogs had some of their moments here. North Carolina, again, wins outright. Memphis wins outright. Wouldn't say. I saw Stanford-Hawaii. That was a back-and-forth game. Not a back-and-forth game, but a game where you go back and forth about, like, was it a bad beat or not, because Stanford was laying, like, 4, 4.5, and Hawaii's down 3 with the ball. So if you just freeze it there, I mean, you're only going to lose if you turn the ball over and turn it over for a touchdown. It's what happened, fumble, and the kid for Stanford actually thought about pulling up. Hey, maybe I should just take a knee because there's a minute left. You could see him pause and hesitate, and then he just says, you know, I'm going to run it in anyway. It felt like Stanford could have easily been up 3 or 4 touchdowns, a lot of points in that game. So I guess that's one where either side, whoever you had, you could say you had a bad beat, because for everything that happened, you're down 3 with the ball and you're catching 4.5, to not cover that one is a tough one. But we'll see what Brad Thomas thinks. We'll get his thoughts. Week 0, week 1, NFL, and more. This. All right, we're back. Should have bet more podcasts, and he is back. You can catch him CBS Sports, and he joins us now. Talk a little college football, some NFL. It is Brad Thomas. Brad, college football is underway. Thanks for coming on, man.
Dude, man, thanks for having me. Yesterday was like, obviously we had like FCS games, but like there's no better feeling than popping on and watching like a Power 5, Power 4 conference game and like literally devoting your whole day to just watching, betting, eating good food. It was like a national holiday.
Yeah, it was great to have it back. And you got, I would say, like, the start of the day and the end of the day were the highlights. Where North Carolina, that game was close. He pulled off an upset. Belichick gives it some excitement. And then the end of the day, the night game with Memphis covering that and winning outright. So the two upsets bookending the day. In between, it was kind of a lot of, you know, USC game was kind of boring. There were a lot of blowouts. It wasn't a great slate in between, but it was, it was fun to start, and it was just great to have it back. What do you make of the UNC win? Is this, hey, all right, maybe Belichick with that defense, they can get enough offense and they can be a little better than people think, much better than people think? Or is this, say, more about TCU? And that quarterback was awful yesterday. But what was your takeaway here, both sides, UNC and TCU?
Yeah, with UNC, I think the bar was just so low. We set the bar so low with UNC that if UNC wins, what, 3-4 games, we're excited. Obviously, they got to beat ETSU. Like, that's a free win, but they got to beat UConn. And then outside of that, there's not a bunch of free wins on their schedule. So picking up TCU, they have a pathway to win 3 or 4 games. But I was just like looking at their schedule and I was like, they have it brutal. Like, I don't think the ACC is some kind of juggernaut, but they play all of the difficult teams, right? They play Louisville, they play Clemson. Well, it's not going to be as difficult this year either way. They play Pitt and they have to play Miami. And guess what? Knock, knock, knock. Virginia just showed that their defense is going to be legit. Their offensive line is legit. So they have to play Virginia. So I think the bar was just set so low with them where we didn't think they were going to win more than 3 games. If they win 4, it'll be really good. I didn't leave that game with like a bunch of takeaways positive for UNC though, right? Like, I feel like a lot of people will talk about how great Belichick was situationally and blah, blah, blah. But the situational awareness was actually on the other side of the ball, right? There were a couple of bad penalties to take that allowed North Carolina to move the chains. Also, you have to kick the field goal there on fourth down, the first fourth down, because then you still have like, what, 9 minutes left to go, 6 minutes left to go kick another field goal to actually go for the win. And then Craig, what's his name? Jaden Craig or whatever. Yeah, Jaden Craig. God, awful, man. Like, and I, this is what like really surprises me about the kind of the landscape of college athletics is like, well, we are sports betting analysts. We are sports analysts, and we are guilty of this sometimes too. But what really drives me nuts is like, there's two trains of thoughts that like really irk me as an analyst or as a fan in general is the crowd theory. Like this, if one person says something's going to be true, a lot of analysts pick it up and then they just dram it down your throats like it's the gospel. We heard all offseason that, oh my God, they get Jaden Craig. This kid is going to be absolutely incredible. And like, it really just made me so mad because like, I'm not trying to take away from Jaden Craig. Like, this is not just me sitting here dumping on him. Like, that's not what I want to do. But way too much hype around a former Harvard quarterback. It was just like, we could get so guilty of it. Like, even the biggest like publications were pounding the table for TCU this year, saying Jaden Craig was going to be the man. He is going to take this team to the next level. Like, he wasn't like amazing for Harvard. He was a good Harvard quarterback, but that was probably my biggest takeaway. Also, TCU just has a bunch of bonehead players, like a lot of really poor coaching moments.
Yes. And not only did they jump off sides to seal the game, but one guy was just like flat out lined up offsides, and that guy would have been called for it either. And I think one of the announcers had a funny line. He goes, Jaden Craig came here to improve his NFL draft stock. And NFL draft stock, this kid's not playing in the NFL.
That kid's not playing in the NFL.
That's crazy. The other takeaway for me, I know they won, they didn't cover. USC, we always hear, this will be the year, better on defense. I know, took foot off the gas. One of the weight scores was off an interception. They still gave up, 26 points to San Jose State. That would be a little bit of a concern. Did you have a good feeling about USC going into that game? Do you change how you feel about them after their first game?
I think I was lower than most on USC. I think a lot of people just thought this was going to be a cakewalk for USC. And honestly, 28 points in the first half probably should have been 21 wasn't going to get the job done for me. It's just a weird year for USC because, they bring Patterson over. The defense should improve. They gave up like 6.5 yards per play to San Jose State. I don't even care if it's in garbage time. And we can't really say, oh, yeah, they put their backups in. USC had like 8 freshmen get meaningful playing time. Those freshmen are going to be good. I do think what we should talk about USC is not this year. I don't think we're going to be talking about USC this year. I think next year they're going to be much better, right? They have some dudes on the defensive line who are young and really good and made some meaningful plays, getting pressure on the quarterback, making some tackles. Also the tight end, Max Bowman's pretty good. The quarterback, who I thought was really good, Jonas Williams, former four-star, I think he was the number two quarterback. Like, there's good things to be said about this. And I don't think the San Jose State team is going to be any good. So the fact that you gave up 26 points to San Jose State, and I don't care, Will. We see this all the time where these national championship contenders go out there, win 53-0, especially at home. Don't care that you put your backups in. You still should execute at a high level. Giving up 26 points, 6.5, whatever, yards per play to San Jose State, who's a San Jose State team also, like, they're kind of in transition, starting an entirely new offensive line. I thought the lack of pressure, yeah, Luke Waffle has probably like the highlight film, that the highlight clip that everyone's like, oh my God, Luke Waffle pressures the quarterback, like the one pressure that it felt like in the first half from a freshman, mind you. Like, I thought, I'm not as high as USC. Also, I thought they played pretty slow, and I didn't think they were that explosive. Like, you go and look at some of the plays, like, yes, they had throws of 33, 25, 25, 25, 22, like 18. Those were catches. But like, the run game wasn't that explosive. And like, I feel like King Miller, was it King Miller who had that run? No, it was Wayman Jordan, had a run that was like 11 yards or 10 yards in. Like, that was like their first explosive run of the game. And it was like midway through the second quarter. It was not good running.
What's your favorite bet here for week one? Favorite couple bets?
For college football?
Yeah.
Oh, man. College football, week one is always tough for me because I'm a big wait and see kind of person. Like, I just really need to kind of figure these teams out. But I'm going to go ahead and I want to just double check this spread real quick because I want to make sure it's exactly what I thought it was. I'm looking at the Ohio State line. It moved. I was going to take Ohio State at 49.5. It's 50.5 now. I think they win this game 50-0. 50.5 is out of my play range. I didn't lock anything in outside of that. Week one and week zero are just really wait and sees. But there are some things that I want to look out for. I think that's probably more important than any bet I can give out for. And we'll start first with Oregon. Who does Oregon play in week one? Boise State. Oregon plays a formidable opponent, a team that's now in the new formed Pac-12, who is going to want to take their lunch. I want to see how Oregon protects the quarterback this year with a new formed offensive line, probably starting or at least having two freshmen getting meaningful minutes. I want to see this 1-2 punch of the running backs. And I want to see if they could stop the run. They're going to have probably the oldest, if not one of the most experienced defensive lines in the country. They did lose some of that depth to the depth. Some of that depth to the transfer portal. But I think that's what I want to see. I want to see the next, obviously I have to talk about Alabama. I want to see how Alabama's offensive line looks. So Alabama has, I think, arguably one of the best young guards in all of college football, and Michael Carroll. They have a freak athlete in Jackson Lloyd at left tackle. To be honest, all the other offensive line positions are probably the biggest question marks. If you can't protect the quarterback, you can't run the ball, you're not going to be a good team. Like, good for Alabama, Ohio State, Indiana, Georgia. Good teams are 10-plus win teams. Like, we no longer measure them with just getting into the playoffs because now so many teams get into the playoffs. That's what I kind of want to look out for. I want to see there was also one more team that I wanted to see. Who was it? It was Auburn-Baylor. So Auburn is a 7-point favorite. They brought in so much new talent, brought in a new coach. They're going to change their offensive identity entirely. The problem with Auburn last year, outside of just a quarterback that held the ball too long, didn't know how to throw the ball. That was disrespectful. Let's just say he just held the ball too long and didn't make the throws he needed to. Their offensive line play was pretty bad. And it doesn't matter if you bring in, if you have a Jackson Arnold or a Byron Brown, if you can't protect the quarterback's going to be scrambling for their lives. I think Byron Brown's going to be running for a lot. Obviously, the rush yards aren't out this early. I think he's going to have a lot of rushing attempts. I want to see, can their offensive line be better? From spring practice, even in fall camp, There was nothing that showed me that Auburn's going to make a next step with the offensive line. We know the defense is going to be good, but I need to see how Auburn's offensive line was going to be. And then I had a couple of these like wait and sees. Like I was on a show with Chip Patterson from CBS, and he said a statement. I think this is probably resonates with me the most. It's called, you know, Learn Something Saturdays, right? You might have one or two bets, maybe have five bets. You know, there's going to be like 30, 40 games to bet on. But the most important thing you could do is have your notepad open and you learn something. Because we're going to learn something about these teams that have all these new players, have all these new position groups that we have to kind of see how they're going to gel, how they're going to mesh. And like, don't also, when you're learning something, don't just go and say, pick up your phone and be like, oh my God, I'm going on ESPN or I'm going on The Score and USC scored 42 points. Jaden Maiava had 280 plus yards. Oh my God, they ran for 215 yards. Don't go do that. Don't do that. Watch the game. Go watch the game and see, are they winning in the trenches? How are they doing on third down? How many yards are they getting on first down? Are they behind in the chains? How many penalty yards do they have? That is more important than any bet you can make in weeks. I'll say between week zero to week three, the most important thing you need to do is write down how these teams are performing in the trenches, how they're doing on first and third down, how first and second down. How are they winning the field position battle? I want to add that special teams is really important. And the turnover possession, the metrics. Like those are the key things that you need to watch, not the box scores.
What are the two big games? Clemson, LSU. LSU laying 10.5. And then Ole Miss against Louisville here. Under the key number of 7, Ole Miss laying 6.5. I have a hard time laying points this early in the season. You missed the best number on Louisville here, and you hate being under on a key number, but did you have any thought or two or lean on those two games?
I wanted to like a total closer to like 54, right? It's at 55.5 now. I feel like this is one of those years where, one of the situations for Ole Miss where we think there's going to be a massive step back in offensive ability because Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr. left. But I'm not like a big believer that it's going to impact them early in the season. And I respect Louisville, and I think Louisville is going to be a really good team. I still think I kind of like the 6.5 with Ole Miss. I don't know if it's a bet I'm going to make. This is just a team that's going to be better defensively. What's his name? But God, I'm drawing a blank on their coach now.
Kiffin?
Pete Golding. I don't think Golding's that good of a defensive coordinator anyway. So even if you have better defensive players, I don't think the defensive strategy is going to make them better. So that's what kind of makes me have a really hard time getting to the 6.5. Like, I know the offense is going to be good. Lacey, you have good wide receivers. You have Trinidad. Your offensive line is going to be pretty good. Probably going to be a bigger offensive line than Louisville's defensive line. So they should be able to win in the trenches, but it's the defensive side that makes me have questions. And then this LSU-Clemson game. Let's talk about this. LSU is now a 10.5-point favorite. Will, LSU is going to have, what, three freshmen on the defensive line? If I am Dabo Sweeney, I'm running the ball until they say you can stop me. I don't care about who's the quarterback, Vezina. I don't care what you think of Vezina. I want you to go and run the ball every play until those young defensive players can stop you. I think LSU's going to be able to pull up points, but I mean, you're changing an entire offensive identity. You're bringing in over 20 new players on offense and defense. It's just so much to make gel in 1 week against a P4 team while laying 10.5.
NFL, I don't think I've talked to you about this. What's your strongest take? You think this team's going to be way better than people think or way worse than people think?
Let me see. You know, do you mind if I pull up my power ratings real quick?
Go for it.
I didn't have it off the top of my head. But this year I did like a pretty intuitive, I've been getting into a lot more advanced modeling than before. Like my modeling was pretty basic. Now like I've been making these pretty sick algorithms. So I've been fine-tuning fine-tuning my power rankings. I had the Colts really low.
Interesting.
I had the Colts 20th in my power rankings. So the Colts, they check the boxes in a lot of really good spots, right? Defensive line, I think their defensive line pressure rate's going to be pretty high this year. Oh, no, offensive line. Yeah, defensive line stuff rate's going to be pretty good. So they'll be able to stop the run. They'll be a team that can stop the run. You're not going to be able to run on them. I think their pressure rate's going to be really low. So that means it's going to put a lot of emphasis on the back line, the back side of that defense in the secondary. Also don't know what to expect out of Daniel Jones. Early reports, he looks healthy. He looks good. But listen, it's a big difference expecting a Aaron Rodgers, a Patrick Mahomes, let's go old school, Drew Brees off injury. It's a big difference expecting those guys to come back and go back to the level they were than expecting Daniel Jones, who had only been at this level once, to come back from injury and go back to that level. It's a very big expectation. And also, like, Jonathan Taylor, another year older. Not that I don't think Jonathan Taylor's going to have a good year, but, like, how much are you going to honestly, realistically be able to lean on him? And then the wide receiver core. They got some injuries, right? So they're a lot lower than I probably think the market is on.
What do you have a sleeper team? Anyone you think kind of come out of nowhere? You think, let me ask it this way. The Jets, the Browns, the Cardinals, the Dolphins, all the crap. There's usually one with the way the NFL goes that, wow, that team. I mean, last year, the Bears, the Panthers. There's usually one that kind of comes out of nowhere that nobody expected to be good. Do you see any hope for any of those teams?
Man. Not the Browns. I actually have a pretty funny take about the Browns. I think the Browns should tank. So the Browns have so many good pieces on their team. But imagine if the Browns get the first overall pick. They can trade back to 5 because I think there's 5 quarterbacks in this draft that can change your franchise. Trade back to 5, get extra draft picks, go O-line in their second in the comeback in their second pick in the first round that they're going to obviously trade that first round pick for. They will set them up for success, like legitimate success. Surprise team. I'm going to go Arizona. I think they're going to have a really good offensive attack this year. Defensively, always is going to be a struggle for them. But when you have an offensive-minded head coach, it kind of lends you to mask your inefficiencies on the defensive side of the ball. Like the problem with them last year was their offense was subpar and their defense was bad. If you're going to be one of those teams that's you just have to own it, right? Like, we are going to go out there, we're going to score a ton of points, and they have no excuse not to. They have a decent enough quarterback. They have solid wide receiving weapons. And I do think moving Marvin Slott around a little bit more, making him more versatile, will open him up a little bit more as a player. They have a good running game. They have 4 reliable backs. Like, why can't that offense be better than subpar?
I'm with you week to week. I think they're going to be feisty. And I actually like them week 1 against the Chargers. That's a lot of points, 10.5.
Yeah.
Even if you're down 17 late, the back door is open. The problem is you look at that schedule. Look at your 6 division games. 2 Seahawks, 2 Rams, 2 49ers. And the NFC West crossover is the NFC East, and they play the AFC West. So
yeah,
you're playing the Cowboys. You're playing the Eagles. That schedule is
The hardest schedule in the NFL.
Yeah, it's probably
I do have them as the hardest schedule in the NFL.
It doesn't surprise me. That's one of the hardest schedules I've ever seen. And the Giants were like this last year, and I think the Giants were kind of similar where they would cover, and they actually could have won a bunch more games, but they would be feisty. It's just they wouldn't end up, you know, with a whole lot of wins. So
yeah,
maybe you see a season like that from Arizona. Last one, anything week 1 catch your eye in terms of the spreads here?
There were some interesting lines here. It called me crazy here. Did that Denver line look weird? Like Denver getting 3, right? Like, why can't I just take Denver +3 against the Chiefs? Like the Chiefs, okay, Will, I bet the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl. Only because we're talking about a standalone bet, not a week-to-week bet. Was 18-1 at the time. If things go right, if, you know, they're making moves for the offensive line to get better, the defense we know can always improve on Spagnuolo. If Patrick Mahomes is good, if they can run the ball, Rashee Rice doesn't get suspended, Travis Kelce can still have some juice, right? It's good value, good upside. That could be a line that we see closer towards the end of the season around 8-1, right? So now I'm getting good value on it. But from a week-to-week standpoint, I don't mind fading the Chiefs, especially when anytime they're laying points. I think Denver's a good enough team to just hold this down defensively. That's probably my... I actually took another bet too. What was it? I took Rams money line. I don't normally lay a bunch of juice. I think I took it at like -170 though. I'm seeing 185. I actually have it in my slips. Let me tell you what I took. I don't think I took 185. Just why I'm saying this, because this was a bet that I made before they said we're going to get an announcement soon. Yeah, I got it around minus 180. They said we're going to get an announcement soon on Puka Nacua. This, my thought process changes on this game entirely if Puka Nacua plays. Doesn't play. If Puka Nacua doesn't play, I think the line moves to 3, maybe 2.5. You take Niners if you could still get this number, like right when the news is announced. Like if you get 3.5, news is announced, 3.5, hit your sports book, bet 3.5, take the points. You lose, you're fine, whatever. Like that's a line you could get down with.
What are your Sunday traditions for watching the games? You just watch them at home? Do you go to a bar? What do you do on Sundays?
So I do a good mix. I do a show that ends an hour before football's over, which gives me enough time to get ready and go. Sometimes we'll try to do like once a month. The boys, we go to this bar called The Porch. Free ad for you, The Porch. That means I want some free chicken wings next time I come in. They're pretty dope. They let us kind of like take over the whole middle spot because we have a pretty big group. I order like 4 orders of chicken wings and then like just drink some vodkas and waters. And if I'm not doing that, I'm sitting at the house, man, and I'm throwing something on the grill.
Brad, appreciate it, man. Great time of the year. Let everyone know where you can find your stuff.
Yeah, guys, first and foremost, we got to keep the lights on. So make sure you go to my ex, show some love at Mr. Brad Thomas. I don't care. Just like some stuff. And then you can find me on CBS Sports weekdays about 3 times, 4 times a week. That's prime time, 6:30. I'm forgetting the time right now. I've been a long morning. 6:30 and then sportsline.com.
All right, that'll do it. Rate, review, subscribe. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to Brad Thomas. Be back on Wednesday. See you then.